Hello, and welcome to Sobercast, where we provide AA speaker meetings and workshops in podcast format. We're an ad-free podcast, and if you enjoy listening, please help us be self-supporting by visiting Sobercast.com, look for the donate link, and drop a dollar or two into our virtual basket. We hope you enjoy the podcast. Have a great day.
But not quite. I come from a place called Jersey, which is not New Jersey, it's the old Jersey. Okay? It's a little island, sort of three quarters of the way towards France, that somehow or other doesn't quite belong to England and doesn't quite belong to France. And it was once described as a rock 50 square miles with 70,000 alcoholics clinging to it in the middle of the English Channel. And it was 70,001, and I was the... I got sober in that. I did a lot of drinking in that island. I did a lot of drinking some other places too, and I got sober in that island. I've got to tell you that my sober date is the 11th of December, 1981, which is a heck of a long time ago. And I don't take any credit for that. I'll tell you why later. I'll get to that. I didn't know that the 11th of December was probably the last day that Bill drank. I had no idea of that. In fact, somebody asked me 2 years after I got sober what my sober date was, and I had to go back and look and try and figure it out. And from the first meeting I went to, which was a step meeting. But it was a 12 and 12 step meeting. However, I was very lucky, because at that time, Alcoholics Anonymous in the island was something like 18 months old. And there were some people who had been sober a couple of years that had come from Glasgow. And my first sponsor was Billy, who was Billy Faulkner, who was a Glaswegian truck driver who smoked creme caramel, cafe creme little cigarillos. And he showed up with a big book under his arm. And he didn't really know what he was doing. But he said, we're going to go through the steps. And as they're laid out in here. And what Billy did, he took me through the steps as they're laid out in here. Over the next sort of 6 months or so. Okay? 6 months or so. To get me to step nine. Now, why did he have to get me to do that? Well, I very rarely tell my drinking story. This is going to be very short. I started drinking when I was 14. And I took a drink officially, if you like. I'd had a couple of other instances when I took a drink before. I can remember a Christmas when I was about 6, sitting underneath the Christmas table, drinking my grandfather's Dubonnet. And Dubonnet is kind of like a fortified wine. And I loved it. And I didn't get sick, I just got very sleepy, and I was kind of like, oh, this is nice. I got rude. Nice. And I was under the table drinking my grandfather's Dubonnet. While everyone, there was all the grown-ups' legs and feet and stuff, and I'm sitting under. But then I didn't pursue it after that. I just sort of like carry on being a normal kid until I got to be 14, because that's important, you see. There's kind of girls show up on the scene, and it's kind of like the early 60s, and there's stuff going on in the UK, and it's like mods and all that kind of stuff, and there's some stuff going on. And I couldn't do that. Couldn't do it. There was no way. I was paralyzed. And at 14, I shouldn't have been doing it anyway, but I was hanging out with some older guys. And I took my first drink, and it was cider. Now, you know cider here is not being alcoholic, I believe, anyway. Or perhaps you call it hard cider. We call that other stuff apple juice, where I come from. And I soon learned, at 14 or 15, I soon learned that if you put a shot of brandy in the cider, it did the job even better. And I drank like that, and I overdrank from the very beginning. Something happened. I reckon there's this thing. This was saying, you know, it's like, where do we cross the line to become alcoholic? Halfway down my first drink. Halfway down my first drink, I knew I was going to do this as often as I possibly could, as much as I possibly could, like forever. Because something happened. I got to that place. I suddenly belonged. I suddenly fitted. I could do all the stuff that my buddies were doing. I could go to discos. I could go and talk to the girls and stuff. I shouldn't have been doing that when I was 14. I've always been a little bit taller. And I'm hanging out with older guys. I was going to those kind of places. They were maybe a year, 18 months older than me, but they were legal to go to those sort of places. I wasn't. And I drank like that for the next 20 years, but it got worse. When I left school, it was kind of like a choice. I was either going to go to art school, or I was going to go to sea. My strange kind of combination, but my family are like five generations of seamen. Okay. So we've always been at sea. The whole family has always gone to sea. So I was going to go to sea, and I was going to get to be a captain, and I was going to get to be whatever. That was my ambition. I drank myself out of that. I was a functioning alcoholic for many years. I had just enough to get me there, and then topped up to stay there. And I can remember kind of fighting it to look like I was sober, but be half full, you know. And if I relaxed, I'd fall in a heap on the floor. But I was kind of, you know, it's like, and it's hard. Man, that is hard. You do that for 10 years. It's hard. It's a lot of work. And what happened was that as the illness progressed, it got harder and harder to hold that together. And I overdrank more and more and more. And it got to a place where I almost put it, there's a ship just now in the news, there's a ship in Italy on its side. It hit a rock. The skipper made a mistake. The skipper was showing off. He was doing what I did. I'm not saying, so don't quote me in the news, but you can see what he was doing. I'm going close to those rocks. I'm going to go and hoot at a buddy of mine. And I got that close to doing what he did. But my boss saw it. And I was told to shape up or ship out. And I said, I'll show them, I'll ship out. And that was the end of my career at sea until I got sober. From then onwards, I became less and less employable. I ended up employing myself because no one else would. Doing something that I didn't really know how to do, that had no kind of... I'm kind of interested in motorcycles and cars and stuff like that. And I started a business making sort of, well, not even customizing. It was just like, it was a hole in the wall where I did a lot of drinking in the back. And there was alcohol within six feet of me all the time. The last maybe 5 or 6 years of my drinking, I did not stop. It was continuous. I hadn't made any serious attempt to stop all of my drinking. It never occurred to me that I should stop. If you had your life like me, if you were married to the woman I was married to, if the people treated you like they did, you'd drink too. On the 11th of December 1981, I was 34 years old. I'd had 20 years of continuous drinking. I've been in California before. I was in California in 1978. I was off my face. I don't remember half of it. I hung out in Huntington Beach. I think I saw the house that I was living behind in one of those camper things that you put on the back of pickup trucks. But it was on blocks at the back of this little bungalow place about two blocks from Main Street. I don't remember much of that either. I hitchhiked up and down here, San Francisco and back and all that stuff. Yeah. I was a good hippie. Peace. I used all that other stuff too. I did a lot of psychedelics, I smoked a lot of dope. did all that stuff, but there was always alcohol on the table. And when I got to be 34, I can remember that night. And that's all you need to know about my drinking. It was continuous from 14 to 34, and it got worse. And it took me away from everything. It talks about in the big book, it says, pitiful and comprehensive demoralization. What does that mean? I was taken to a place where my morals were taken away from me. I became the people my parents warned me against. Seriously, I was hanging out with some really strange people. And in fact, I did the last amend, and this is amazing, but the last amend I did about 6 months ago, somebody I couldn't find. I found him on Facebook. If you're looking for people to make amends to, Facebook is super. I found him at last. And he said to me, he said, well, we always thought you were weird. I said, you didn't know the half of it. You couldn't look inside here. What was going on in here? It was weird. I might have looked weird on the outside, but the inside was worse. That night, I'd been falling down drunk for days. And that night, I don't know what time of night it was. I'd been suicidal for a couple of years. I'd attempted suicide 3 times. I was getting better at it. They always pumped me out. It wasn't a cry for help. I meant it. I meant it because I didn't know what was going on. Because I was hurting the people around me. They were pleading with me to stop. I was so promising that I was going to stop. And I was drunk within hours. Not days, hours. And I didn't know what was going on. And I can see that I'm hurting people. And I thought I'm a bad person. The best thing I can do is just leaving. Because everywhere I go, I leave this trail of damage. They describe it perfectly in the big book. The alcoholic is a tornado roaring through the lives of others. I've not seen a tornado, but I've seen the news. When a tornado goes through somewhere, you can see where it's been. That was me. You could see where I'd been. Outside of my circle, they were okay. Close to me, they were wrecked. I've got photographs of my first wife when we got married and when we divorced when I stopped drinking, maybe 6 or 7 years later, and she had aged 20 years, just living with me. She looks younger today than she did then. Seriously, I mean, we're great friends today. It's an amazing, that's one of the amazing things about amends. But I'm there that night and this darkness opened up in the floor. I can only describe it as that. The floor went dark. It just went black. And I felt like I was falling into this darkness, and I knew that if I went there, I wouldn't come back. I just knew. And I ended up on my knees and I just said, please God, I don't want to die. And I couldn't have stood up. I was so drunk. And I, for some reason or other, I had enough time to go to the phone book and start to look for Alcoholics Anonymous. The problem is I'm slightly dyslexic and I can't spell alcoholic. It's a funny word. The C's and the O's and the L's are all in the wrong place, as far as I can tell. And I looked in the phone book and I couldn't find it. But in the UK, we've got this outfit called the Samaritans. I don't know if you have it in the US. But there are a bunch of people that you phone up when you're suicidal and they talk you down. They're good folks. And I'd phoned them many times and just droned on and on and on about why I was going to commit suicide. A bit like a discussion meeting. But I said, I've got a problem. I think I've got a problem with alcohol. I need to talk to Alcoholics Anonymous. And do you know what the problem was? The surprising thing about that was that I don't think I had a contact with Alcoholics Anonymous or even knew that it existed before that second. I had no idea where that came from. Now, it may have been that somebody that I knew had talked to me about Alcoholics Anonymous in a blackout. And I don't remember it. I have no idea. I don't know. I've asked a couple of people who were in Alcoholics Anonymous just before me if they'd talked to me about it, and they said, no, I've no idea. But the idea came that I needed to contact Alcoholics Anonymous. And they said, stay where you are. Well, I couldn't go anywhere anyway. I was on my knees. Someone will come round in about half an hour. And by the time they came, I was sort of passing out, and they lifted me up and said, stay there, somebody's coming to see you tomorrow morning. And Billy showed up. Cafe Creme cigar, big book. And we sat down, and he started to tell me that I had an allergy to alcohol. And he explained the allergy using the doctor's opinion. And he said that when I drink alcohol, there's an old Irish saying that a man takes a drink, and then the drink takes a drink, and then the drink takes the man. And it's exactly what happened to me. And he explained that I had an allergy, and immediately I understood why when I couldn't go home, I couldn't leave the bar. When I could see my buddy Fred go home, I'd stay one more before I go, and then another one before I go. And it's only 9 o'clock and I don't go to bed till midnight, and it's a long time. I'm going to need some more before I go, otherwise I won't sleep. And I'd be drinking till midnight. I'd get home about 3:30, 3 o'clock in the morning, I'd be awake. Sweat, palpitations, the whole deal. And I'd go around and I'd try and find a bottle that I'd hidden somewhere. And I used to find empties because I used to hide empties. Don't know what that was all about. I didn't want the trash man to know how much I was drinking. I don't know what that was about. But my house was full of empties. Crazy. I wasn't hiding the full ones, it was the empties I was hiding. What's all that about? And we went through the steps, and I got to a place called recovered. I believe I did. And I started to do my amends. By June or July of that year, I was doing my amends, and I would have told you, later on, I would have told you that I've done all my amends. And the amazing thing is that I got well quickly. And I started to get back the things that I drank myself out of. I started, after about 3 or 4 years, or a couple of years, I started hanging out around the yacht club where I used to hang out, and people used to take me sailing and stuff, and I started to get this thing back. And then somebody said, oh, you've still got a master's ticket, you can go on, you can do a relief on a ship, ship needs a mate. Go on board that ship to go be a mate for a month. So I started to go back to sea, about 3.5 years sober. And I ended up back at sea, and I ended up skipper and ships again, sober. I decided after a while that was kind of like, it was like going to jail for 2 months. It really was. It just wasn't what I wanted to do. And then I started to teach navigation and sailing to recreational sailors. Great fun. I had a ball. And I would have told you, at 10 years sober, I would have told you that I'm a fully paid up member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I've done all of my amends. I've been taken through the steps of the big book, haven't I? And that was normal. I'm going to meetings, big meetings, lots of discussion going on. Something's changing in Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't notice it. I get to a place where I'm about 10 or 11 years sober, and I start to think, look at my life, and I'm starting to say, not quite good enough. Do you know in the doctor's opinion it says we're irritable, restless, and discontent, or restless, irritable, and discontent? Restless. I couldn't stay in one place. I was changing jobs all the time. Couldn't stay in one relationship. I got divorced from my first wife. Couldn't stay in one relationship for very long. Couldn't sit still with myself. I'd sit still, I'd be sitting there and the knee would be going. You know the knee thing? I'd be shifting around all the time. Restless. There's something restless in here. It wasn't me. I had no control over the leg thing. It's something in me. Irritable. I get angry quick. You look at me funny. I know what you're thinking. Discontent. It's never quite good enough. Never quite good enough. It's not that I hate everything. It's just not quite good enough. Just a little bit more. Just a little bit more. And they also say in the book that selfishness, self-centeredness is the root of our problem. There's two things there. Selfish. Selfish is, I've got it, it's mine. You're not having it. Self-centered is, I'm looking at me all the time. How am I doing? How am I feeling? Am I feeling okay? Am I hot? Am I cold? Am I happy? Am I sad? Self-centered. I'm looking in all the time. Monitoring myself all the time. Self-monitoring all the time. Self-centered. How am I doing? Is everybody else doing what I want them to do? And I said, in my wisdom, I decided that I wouldn't have to work anymore, but now what I was going to do was I was going to marry someone who had money. 11, 12 years sober, this is. Okay. Fully paid up member of Alcoholics, and I tell you, I'm an old timer. I'm going to go marry money. I started to do quite a lot of research. We didn't have the internet then, but local papers had Lonely Hearts columns. It's a bad man. A lot of amends to do. But what I'm doing is exactly what I did when I was drinking. Exactly. And what I'm doing is I'm starting to manipulate people. Page 63 says. Well, no, page 60 says. I am very much like an actor who wants to run the whole show. I am forever trying to arrange the lights, the ballet, the scenery, and the rest of the play in my own way. If only my arrangements would stay put. If only people would do as I would have you, as I wish, the show would be great. Everybody, including us, would be pleased. See, I know what you want. If you do what I want you to do, you're going to be happy too. I mean, looking at it from this, what's in there, how deluded is that? But that's what I was doing. And I manipulated myself into a place where I actually met someone with a lot of money. And we ended up getting married. And I ended up as a third owner of a restaurant. Now, I know nothing about restaurants. But I do tell you this now. It's a 7 day, 24 hour, it's a 7 day a week, 24 hour a day occupation. And I wasn't used to that. And all of a sudden, I suddenly realized I put myself in a place where I really didn't belong. And the irritability, restlessness, and discontent came back. And one night, dashing around, see, my wife was the chef, and I was doing everything else. And I'm out in the prep room, and someone had ordered some Australian red wine. I can remember, it's called Shiraz. It's Shiraz Red, and it's called Barramundi. I can remember it now. It looks like something I used to drink when I was a kid called Ribena, which was a blackcurrant drink that's like, and it even smelt like that. Very fruity, kind of. You don't have that in the US. But I picked up these two glasses, and I'm walking into the restaurant, and my head is screaming at me. See? Look at what you've done now. Look at where you are now. You've dug this hole for yourself. Look where you can't get out of this now. All your money's in this restaurant. You can't get out of this. Look what you've done now. You've blown it this time. You might as well drink. I've got two glasses in my hand. And there's a little voice inside that goes, you can't drink, you're alcoholic. Immediately, I go back to what I did before, which is exit. Yeah, it's just suicide. It's just like, no point anymore. And I put the two glasses down on the table, and I was propelled out of the restaurant into the street. I'm serious. I walked through the kitchen. Where are you going? Out. And I was in the street, and I'm going, what happened there? And then I locked myself in a room. 2 days. and I'm rocking and saying Hail Marys. I don't know what to do. I go back to Alcoholics Anonymous. Now you see, there's a bit in the book that describes us perfectly. And it's I'm going to find it in a second. Here you go. Page 50, 51. Bottom of page 50 it says, once confused and baffled by the seeming futility of existence, sober or drunk. You see, I'm 16 years sober and I've been living dry drunk. I haven't been drinking, but I've been doing the same stuff as I was doing before when I was drinking. This is drunk or sober, this illness of Alcoholics Anonymous. You don't have to be drinking to suffer from alcoholism. In fact, once you stop drinking, you start suffering from alcoholism. Because alcohol was my solution to alcoholism. It was my buddy. It stopped this. It stopped this committee meeting up here. And the committee meeting went away for many years, but it came back because I started to act in a particular way. And I started to act in the way on page 60-61. I started to live in a selfish, self-centered, dishonest and fearful way. I wanted what I want when I wanted it. And I would do anything to get it. Anything. I would change who I was sober. I would act in a way that you would accept me sober. I would tell you that I was a fully paid up member of Alcoholics Anonymous and I had 15 years sobriety, didn't I? And I was an old timer. But what was happening was that the illness, what I believed, selfishness, self-centeredness, the root of our problem was coming back. And it says here, it says, baffled, confused and baffled. I was confused and baffled at 16 years sober. By the seeming futility of existence, I had everything I wanted, but it was futile because there was no point to it. They show the underlying reasons why they were making heavy going of life. I was making heavy going of life at 16 years sober, suffering from alcoholism. It had come back. I treated it for a few years, but I'd stopped doing what the steps asked me to do. There's a program here for life. It's a way of living. They talk about it in the book a lot, a way of living. It's not a gadget to get sober and then we get on with our lives. See, I suffer from something that's going to kill me if I don't stay spiritually fit. It's going to kill me. I suffer from that. I'm 30 years sober. Do you think I've transcended alcoholism? No way. You should have seen me. You should have seen me at Newark Airport when we were flying through. I haven't transcended alcoholism at all. I need to work the stuff. I need to work these steps. I need to be in this program. Continue to work this way of life. This way of life is for life. You see, the trick of being an alcoholic, the trick of being an Alcoholics Anonymous is to die sober. If we die sober, we've beaten it. We've beaten alcoholism. We die of something else. Because alcoholics die of alcoholism. They don't die of drinking. Very few of us actually die from the result of drinking too much. Most of us die from accidents, from being shot, being violence, from drowning on our own vomit, from suicide. Suicide's very prevalent, particularly in people who are trying to stay sober. Where I live, in the last 8 years, there's been 10 people die. There was someone with 26 years sobriety actually killed herself. This is killer, drunk or sober. This is going to kill us or kill me. I don't know about you, but I know it's going to kill me. So I need to live this way of life. You see what it says here? It says leaving aside the drink question. So leaving aside alcohol, they tell why life was so unsatisfactory. Why is life unsatisfactory? Well, because I'm trying to run the whole show. Because I'm selfish, self-centered, and I want you to do what I want you to do when I want you to do it. If not quicker. see? And I ended up in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, 16 years sober, sitting at the back of this meeting on a Sunday night in Exeter in the UK. And I'm sitting in the back and I cried all the way through the meeting. And I've been crying for days. I sit right at the back of the meeting. And somebody said to the end of the meeting, the little guy that ran the meeting, said, I can't think of his name, he's just gone from me now. I have this strange memory. He said, is there anybody else in the room who wants to share something? And I think it must have been fairly obvious that there was something going on in the back. And I stuck my hand up and I said, I'm 16 years sober. I almost drank 3 days ago and I'm suicidal. Thank you for sharing. Serenity prayer. Do you know nobody came up to me after that? Nobody came up to me. I was leaving and somebody just came to me and just as I was leaving. But nobody said anything. Nobody offered a solution. Nobody offered anything. And he said to me, have you ever worked the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous? I said, yes. And I had. He said, when? I said, well, when I first came here, 1981. And he said, how long ago is that? I said, 16 years. He said, well, maybe you're trying to live on a spiritual experience you had 16 years ago. What are you doing now? I said, well, not much. And I started to go to a little group which was studying the big book. Not as we know how to study the big book, but studying the big book. But they still really didn't know how to take me through the steps. And then I had a gift. I had a wonderful gift, and it was a gift of a detached retina. And the reason, at the time I thought, why am I having, you know, this is just unfair. Detached retina. And I had to have this operation. And I ended up with an eye that had been filled with gas. They fill it with gas so that it blows the retina and keeps the retina while it repairs. And I had to lay down for a month. So I went back to Jersey. And I went back to my mother's house. And there was some old AA stuff that I had in the cupboard there. And I had to lay down. And I still couldn't find anybody to take me through the steps. And I picked out a box of old tapes. And I found my old big book. And the tapes I had a set of Joe and Charlie tapes. And I had a little tape player, little Sony radio tape player. Funny little goofy thing. I didn't even know whether it worked. And I stuck the tapes in, and I'm lying on my side. And I got the big book. And Joe and Charlie took me through the big book. And I stopped the tape. Whenever they said do something, I stopped the tape and I read the book and I did what they told me to do. I did what the book told me to do. I phoned up a buddy of mine to come and do a fifth step. Somebody who actually got sober a bit longer than me. Didn't know what the hell I was doing. But you're 16 years sober. What are you doing this for? I said, because I'm dying. I did a fifth step with him. I realized that I had amends from previous that I'd never finished. And guess what? Those amends were around relationships. I'd never done my amends around relationships. I'd never gone back and seen the people that I'd hurt when I was playing around before. And at 16 years sober, I was doing exactly the same thing. 16 years on, I was doing exactly the same thing as I was doing before I quit drinking. And I had some amends to do from way back. And I've done them all. Done them all. And this guy I found on Facebook was the last one, and I was looking for him. And I'd look for him and look for him and look for him. There were some people who died. There was one lady that I heard really badly who died. I did a graveside amends. You can be free of all your amends. I encourage you to be free of all your amends. I started to seek people who know what's in here, who have studied what is in here. And I came across this amazing old guy in Dallas who I found a sponsor from that group in Dallas, because there was nobody else around that understood what the hell I was trying to do. Because sometime between the time that I came to Alcoholics Anonymous and the time I was trying to do the steps again, AA, not only in Jersey but everywhere else, had sort of changed. that we weren't talking about the steps anymore. We weren't talking about working from the big book anymore. We were working from the 12 and 12. And if you've read the 12 and 12, there are no directions in the 12 and 12 of how to work the steps. They're just Bill's idea at 15 years sober of how to do them. And I'm going to say something right now that maybe is going to shock you. But if you read step 4 in the 12 and 12, Bill Wilson is working an entirely different program from the one he wrote about in here. Entirely different. In here it's 4 columns. In the 12 and 12 it's a whole bunch of questions. Here it's 4 columns. Very easy, very simple. You know, who is it? What did they do? What does it affect? What's my mistake? Very simple. I ended up with a sponsor from this group in Dallas who will be here tomorrow. And I found out that his sponsor was this crusty old guy who had actually been sponsored by Joe McCarthy. Joe, who was probably not doing it anymore when I listened to the tapes, had taken me through the steps by tape. Now, I didn't know that was going to happen. I didn't know that I was going to end up going to see this group in Dallas that are amazing. I didn't know that I was going to end up living in the south of France, which is a desert of contemporary AA. I mean, just... And I showed up with a big book on the wall. And I can guarantee you I cleared the room on more than one occasion. Everybody got up and walked out. I have never seen that in Alcoholics Anonymous until that point. You know, we're supposed to love you till you can love yourself. I start talking about the big book, they all get up and leave. How loving is that? I ended up in tears. I was shocked. You see, this book, what's it say here? Alcoholics Anonymous. This book was published 6 months before we had a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. Alcoholics Anonymous, the fellowship, is named after this book. Who knows that in Alcoholics Anonymous today? It's turned into, in most places, very poor group therapy. Why is it poor? Because there's no well people in the room. When you have group therapy, there's one well person there, normally. Look, what's amazing about it, this is only half the big book, okay? This is the big book without the stories. Okay? Now it still looks pretty big, huh? Look at this. Page 24. Page 24 is wonderful because it kills you all through. Page 24, there is no hope on page 24. None at all. At a certain point of the drinking of every alcoholic, he passes into a state where the most powerful desire to stop drinking is absolutely no avail. They've just told us it doesn't matter how much we want to stop, we can't. I'll say that again. It doesn't matter how much we want to stop, we can't. We may be able to delay the next drink for a little bit, but we can't. We've got to understand what we suffer from. We suffer from a mental illness that will take us to drinking. It wants us dead and will settle for us drunk. And if we refuse the drink, it will take us someplace else to change the way we're feeling. What did I do at 16 years sober? I couldn't drink, but I was chasing somebody that could pay my bills. And it wasn't just the money. There was some other stuff around a relationship that I liked as well. Yeah, changes the way I feel. I was doing antidepressants and stuff when I was drinking, but I didn't go down that route, thank God. Some people go to gambling. I know somebody 29 years sober who died drinking because he gambled all his money away to change the way he felt. He was gambling, all never worked the steps. I knew Forklift, and we got some great stories from the forklift mech, we used to call it. He drove a forklift. He never did anything else. The whole of his sobriety, 29 years, drove a forklift truck. Gambled everything. All the time. To change the way he felt. You see, if we don't treat this illness, we may not stop drinking, but it comes out sideways. It comes out in other things. It comes out in other addictions. It comes out in other compulsive stuff. We've got to treat this, otherwise it's going to kill us. The fact, and and it says here, the tragic situation has arrived in practically every case long before it's suspected. Long before. When did it occur in me? I reckon halfway down that first drink when I was 14. The moment I felt what it did to me, it was a spiritual awakening. Oh yeah, I've arrived. Bill says that. I have arrived. I can do what the other kids can do. And then it's this I think should be on the wall of every meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. Forget the steps and the traditions. This should be, and the slogans, well, I've got a thing about the slogans. Especially that, think. What the hell is that about? That's what I do. That's the problem. There's far too much thinking going on there. It's safe for any of us. You know, there's a pamphlet, there's 22 questions or 44 questions. In contemporary AA, they've got this pamphlet, 44 questions. If you put thinking in front of any one of those questions instead of drinking, it's perfect. Did you ever lose a job through too much thinking? Did your thinking put you in trouble with the law? The main problem of the alcoholic center is in his mind. It says it in here. Says it in here. In here, this book. And this should be on the wall in big red letters. The fact. It's a fact. I mean, we've got to read the black bits here. We've got to read the black bits. This guy, you see, the first, up until the ABCs, just after they do the steps. Just after, I'll get it in a minute. Sorry, I just, a clunky old book. It was a clunky book. Just after page 60. Up to page 60, you see, that was done by committee. They thought about every word. It took them 2 years to do that bit. They thought about every word that was in there. They debated about every word that was in there. We've got to read the black bits. Because they meant it. Page 24. The fact that most alcoholics' reasons yet obscure. We're not going to try and explain it. We've got to accept it. Have lost the power of choice in drink. Have you ever been in an AA meeting and you've heard some guy turn around and say, I chose not to drink today? My question is, what are you doing in Alcoholics Anonymous? It tells me on page 24, I can't. I can't choose not to drink. I'm going to drink. No matter what. You see, if you read Fred's story in More About Alcoholism, you read Fred's story, he says at the end, they prophesy that he would drink again. I'll get there. I'm going to run over time. I always do. I really apologize. I like the sound of my own voice. It says our so-called willpower becomes practically non-existent. We are unable at certain times to bring into our consciousness with sufficient force the memory and suffering and humiliation of even a week and month ago. I've also heard in Alcoholics Anonymous, remember your last drink. It'll keep you sober. This says it won't. We won't remember it. We'll be drinking, no matter what. We are without defense against the first drink. That is an always statement I've found out at 16 years sober. It's an always statement. Unless I do something. It says, it continues, and this I think should be in italics as well, the almost certain consequences following even a glass of beer do not crowd in the mind to deter us. If thoughts occur, they are hazy and readily supplanted by the old threadbare idea. This is the old idea. That we shall handle ourselves like other people. Oh, next time it'll be different. Next time I'll be able to do what Fred does, have two drinks and go home. There is complete failure of the kind of defense that keeps one from putting one's hand on a hot stove. And it goes on. I'm going to finish on page 84. Bear with me. Look, there is a solution. He's talking about step one. Okay? By the time we get to page 84, we're at step 10. Look at that. That's 60 pages. That's all that is. 60 pages in a big book that will take you from a hopeless place, no hope on that page, to this. Listen to this. And we have ceased fighting anything or anyone. I fought everything. Everything. Even alcohol. Oh, they add that on at the end. You see, it's not the alcohol we're fighting. It's everybody else. For by this time, sanity will have returned. Oh, second step says, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. I'm insane, they're saying. That's what they're saying. I mean, but we got to get to step 10 before we get restored to sanity. It doesn't suddenly happen. I can't start doing step 10 after doing step 1. I've got to get there by going through those 60 pages. But those 60 pages do contain clear-cut directions. I know they contain clear-cut directions because I did it with a tape player and a big book. Dying of untreated alcoholism at 16 years sober. I wasn't drinking, but I was nuts. If tempted, we recoil as from a hot flame. We react sanely and normally. Wow, there's a promise for an Elkie. Reacting sanely and normally. And we'll find that this has happened automatically. What do you mean? I've just done all this work. I've done a fourth step. I've done a third step. I'm doing all my meds. No. It's happened automatically. The alcohol stuff has happened automatically because what I've been doing is by I've been looking at my selfishness, self-centeredness, and suddenly the alcohol has gone away. It says we will see our new attitude towards liquor has been given to us without any thought or effort on our own part. It just comes. Because I've been working on my selfishness and my self-centeredness and my dishonesty and my fear. And during that work, I have discovered something, that there is a power greater than me that will keep me sober. And I don't need to change the way I feel, because I'm already changing the way I feel by just following these steps. And this power is changing the way I feel. Isn't that amazing? 60 pages. Follow those, and that's what happens. I'm not going to tell you how to do that. Myers and JK are going to do that on the weekend. Probably a lot better than I can. It says we're not fighting. They said this is the miracle of it. It just comes, yeah? We're not fighting it. Neither are we avoiding temptation. We feel as though we've been placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. I feel like I've been reborn a non-drinker. The person who drank and the person who was going nuts at 16 years sober is not me. It really isn't. I look back at my drinking, I find it quite difficult to talk about my drinking at this distance, because it's not me. It was somebody else. It's like I've been reborn, but I must be careful. We feel as though safe and protected. We have not sworn off, instead the problem has been removed. We get to step 10, the problem is removed, I am recovered. If I've done everything between step one properly, to the best of my ability. I won't do it unless I understand step one. I've got to understand step one at a cellular level, that I am absolutely powerless to keep myself sober. Whatever I do, I can delay the next relapse, but I will drink again. You see, I'm very rare in Alcoholics Anonymous. I've got 30 years of sobriety. I'm very rare. There are not many people with 30 years sobriety in Alcoholics Anonymous. Not really. Not in comparison with the people of less than 5 years. And it seems to go in eights. Eight, 16, I know he drank 16. Someone else who was very, a guy called Mark, who was very well known in Alcoholics Anonymous, he went nuts at eight. Eight, 16, 32, who knows? Something going on. It does not exist to us. We are neither cocky or afraid. This is our experience, and this is how we react as long as we keep in fit spiritual condition. Oh, it can come back. That's what they're saying. It comes back. I know it does. I've experienced it. It comes back. So I have to live a way of life that keeps me ahead of my illness. It's almost as though it doesn't matter how spiritually fit I get, my illness is doing press-ups and catching up with me. It's not quite like that. It sounds like I'm on red alert all the time. I'm not. I have today the most amazing life. It says here, it's easy to let up on the spiritual program of action and rest on our laurels. We're headed for trouble if we do, for alcohol is a subtle foe. Subtle, sly, devious, and difficult to detect. It's on me before I know it's on me. It says we are prey to alcohol. Prey. That's what antelope are for lions. Nice story. Yes! It's true. We're prey to this illness. We don't see it coming. I didn't see it coming 16 years sober. Suddenly I wanted to drink. I was feeling like crap, but then suddenly I wanted to drink. We're not cured of alcoholism. What we really have is a daily reprieve contingent on the maintenance of our spiritual condition. How do we maintain our spiritual condition? We practice 10, 11, and 12. Practice. We never get it right. Practice, practice, practice. Walk this way of life. Live this way of life. Live in the book. Walk the book. It's only here you're going to find it. You're not going to find it anywhere else. Fellowship is fabulous, but it's in here that there is a solution. If you're looking for a solution, find someone that knows what is in this book that can take you through these steps and then go carry it to somebody else. Because way, way back, a long, long time ago, and I don't know whether I've got it with me, I hope I have, you see, and I am going to finish on this, Billy gave me this. Long, long time ago. My sponsor, Billy, gave me this. Little blue card. And it says on this little blue card, I am responsible. When anyone ever, anywhere, reaches out for help, I want the hand of AA always to be there. And for that, I am responsible. And the hand of AA isn't keep coming to meetings, put the plug in the jug. The hand of AA is contained in this book. Because, you see, if we do this, we get a gift. If we do this, we get a gift, not only of sobriety, and a happy life. I mean, I'm happy, and this is just like, it really is. It's so cool. No idea. But we get given this gift. But we get given power. I start off here powerless. We get given power. It's not ours. We can borrow it. But it's a power to help other people. And that's our job after we get sober, to carry this message to other people so that they can get what I've got. I can't hang on to this. Got to give it away. And you know, what's really amazing is that if you ask God to show you how to give it away, we get shown how to give it away. And there's nothing frightening or scary about this. Because what it is, it's a gateway to this new way of life. And since that occurrence 14 years ago, I try and be diligent with 10, 11 and 12. Because I think then, and I revisit the other steps on a regular basis, and I look at my first step on a regular basis. Do I still think that I'm powerless over alcohol? Do I still think that alcohol can ambush me if I'm not spiritually fit? And I say, yeah, I can. I get uncomfortable when I start to think that I'm powerless, that I'm actually powerless on my own power. If I stop doing what I'm doing, I will go back to that place where I would drink. But if I keep on doing what I'm doing, then I don't see any reason why I shouldn't beat the game. And my ambition is to be the oldest member of Alcoholics. Not the longest sober, just the oldest. Because I was in the shower, I am really going to finish on this. I was in the shower the other day and I said, I've been surfing, this is back where I live, I've been surfing and I was thinking about coming to see my lady friend and all that kind of, and coming to the USA and all that kind of stuff. And come and see Margareta, and I was just so amazing stuff. And coming to the USA, and going to see Cliff, and see my sponsor, all that kind of stuff. And I'm coming in the shower, and I looked up, and I said, wow, God, I don't want to die. This is too good. I want to stay. And then I thought, hang on, I can't do that. That's like, you can't demand that. I said, okay, well, I want to come back after. I want to come back again because this is too good. You know, I am so grateful to be able to do that. I'm grateful to Angela for letting us live in her apartment. I'm grateful for Jeff for driving me around and listening to me. And I'm grateful for all of you to be here today and listening. And please come and listen to Myers and JK because they're brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. Great admiration for those two guys. And everyone else in that group, because they all go out and do the deal. They carry the message. So thank you.
Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed the podcast. Sobercast is ad-free, and we'd like your help in order to keep it that way. So if you'd like to help us be self-supporting by pledging $1 or $2 a month, visit Sobercast.com and look for the donate links. Thank you very much.